Hi, everyone. My name is Kirk Bachman, and welcome back to The Ultimate Dish. In today's episode, we're speaking with Ron DeSantis, a certified master chef who's as decorated as a five-star general in the culinary world. Ron has worked with some of the nation's top institutions in the food industry, driving culinary concept design, the development of innovative cuisine, and training a diverse group of culinary professionals. He's a lifelong learner, educator, and he's my dear friend. Join us today as we chat with Ron about his passion for learning. There he is, Chef. How are you, buddy?
I'm great. Thank you so much. I hear those things and I think to myself, who is that guy?
Who is that guy?
and it really, I say that because I've been just so fortunate in this career to have so many doors open to me. And all I've done was step through the door. And I've been able to do so many things that I look back on. It's like, that was actually some pretty good stuff. You know, it was really, really good stuff, from meeting the President of the United States, not one, but more, and, you know, heads of state, and all the way to preparing healthy meals for kids. That's probably even more important than meeting the people that are running the country in some ways, because there I'm impacting these young lives. So thanks for the introduction, and it's going great, let me tell you.
Good, good. Sometimes it's nice to kind of step back and just view the show through your lens, right? And maybe you change a few things here or there, but for the most part, hey, that was a pretty good ride.
I wouldn't change a thing.
There you go. I've got to ask, I know that maybe it was a couple of weeks ago, you traveled all the way over to Dubai, right?
I did. It was a last minute opportunity at the invitation of the government to be introduced to plant-based meats. And,
wow. You know,
there was work, but what was even that much more exciting and fun was just experiencing what Dubai is.
Yeah.
You know, in such a short period of time in the desert, creating this unbelievable cosmopolitan city that rivals any modern city on the planet. But you take an hour trip west and you're deep in the Sahara Desert, which I did as well. Just
wow.
An incredible, incredible experience being there in the Middle East.
And that was your first time?
That was the first time in the Middle East, yes. I mean, I've always wanted to visit Israel, but that's as close as I've gotten so far.
What was the one thing that like really stood out that surprised you? I see things on the internet of the indoor ski arenas that are as large as our mountain ski resorts, right?
You know, Kirk, that's a great question. Here's the thing that stood out for me. The warmth and the genuine people that are there. I was made welcome like I just can't even imagine, you know, just as this outsider walking in, the diverse group of people that live there and just working together, and especially in the food business, you know, just making things just fun and exciting and tasty for guests, and just demonstrating great hospitality and fellowship of the table. It wasn't surprising. I didn't really know what to expect, but that's the thing that I came away with. Just the wonderful group of people that are there. And one little story. So we were out in the desert. We got to this oasis where we were going to have dinner. So you walk up and there's a little table there and they have some dates on there and they're pouring coffee. And so you get a half a cup of coffee. And what you're explained is, in the culture, if you're given a half a cup of coffee, you should stay and relax and just enjoy yourself because it will be refilled. If you get a full cup of coffee, it's drinking and go.
You're on the clock.
You're on the clock. Because, you know, maybe there are other things that
sure.
the host has to do, and they're limited time, or they didn't have enough food, or maybe they don't like you. Here's a full cup of coffee. But it's very civilized to let you know, here's a full cup of coffee. Enjoy the coffee, but now it's time to go.
Subtle, half a cup but of coffee, to the point.
Yeah, and half a cup of coffee. It's just sit down, enjoy, relax. And I just love, I'm a sucker for those kind of things. But I really think that it's a display of hospitality and certain elements of culture that were so valuable for me to experience there.
That's wonderful. What a great story. Was the reception of plant-based cooking well-received?
So here's the thing, because it's a cosmopolitan city, you have people from all over the world. There are a lot of people looking for meat alternatives. And let me tell you, in the Middle East, they love their kebabs.
Yeah,
there's like, yeah. Kebabs are king.
It's culture. And so
And to have an option there that would be a plant-based meat, whether it was a lamb kofta or it was some type of chicken or beef satays, that was very, very well received. The other thing about it is, if you can deliver in texture and taste, it's like, just give me good food. It's really what it came down to. Give me some really great food.
Isn't that what we all just really want? Good food.
Exactly.
Prepared well. Like so many chefs, and I don't know when we first met, but we've been doing this for a while, but like so many chefs, you came from humble beginnings and you were introduced to cooking. And I'd love for you to just take us on a brief journey of what about that introduction to cooking and whenever that was in your life made you decide, or did it take a while to decide to pursue this career being a chef? And then, of course, you taking it to the pinnacle and becoming ultimately a master chef.
So, Kirk, I had no idea that people cooked for a living. you know, my father was a school teacher. My grandparents had a local grocery store in a little 2,000 person town. And I didn't know that. And when I went to the military, they said, "You're going to be a cook." I'm like, okay. Here's the thing. Sometimes you just get lucky in life. I ended up at a duty station in San Diego, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, and not in the giant food factory that serves 5,000 recruits a day, but in the enlisted for all the Marines that work and live there, serving them. And the cooks in there loved what they were doing. And I got so lucky because they just like, come on, you're doing this with us.
They embraced you.
And they show you what you're doing. And they opened my eyes to, this is a really cool thing. And then I realized I have a natural aptitude for it. And it took me a long time to be able to say that for myself, that I have a natural aptitude for it, because it sounds bombastic and boasting, but I just know how to do it. I don't have to try hard. I do try hard, but it comes naturally, and I'm very, very fortunate at that. And after the service, I went to the Culinary Institute of America, got my degree there. Most of the chefs, instructors, a lot of them were European. So I figured you had to go to Europe to learn to cook. So I did. Spent 5 years in Germany. And why Germany? Because they were offering working visas. That was the reason. Spent 5 years there, came back, worked, and eventually got a teaching position at the CIA. Was fortunate to teach for at least 11, 12 years, had some administrative posts, associate dean, director of CIA consulting, and had a great 25-year career, and then was recruited by Yale to head up their director of culinary excellence that oversaw the production of the Yale's 15,000 from-scratch meals a day. And here's the thing, back at the CIA, and I'm going to tie this into plant-based, sorry, I have to. Back at the CIA, I was teaching healthy cooking, techniques of healthy cuisine. And because I was teaching it, I figured I'm going to practice what I preach. I shifted my diet to primarily plant-based. Probably at the time, it was about 75% plant-based. When I got to Yale, our menu was about 87, 88% plant-based. So that just fed into what I believed in. And then in 2017, I met Todd Boyman, the CEO of Hungry Planet. I tried his food and I said, let's talk a little bit more. What you're doing is very, very intriguing. And I'm not 100% plant-based, but I inch more and more to that. You know, if I was to pick a number, I'm probably about 90%, a real flexitarian. But that's kind of that transition along the way. So here I am at at the later stages of my career, and I'm manufacturing, I'm making food. And one of the things that I find especially exciting about this is our mission statement says to bend the curve on personal and planetary health. I am actually doing that because of people's choices of food. They're eating better and healthier, and we're positively impacting the planet's health as well. I really am grateful for where I am, and I'm enjoying the heck out of, you know, presenting foods, all the foods behind me, that's all plant-based, but it just looks like regular food. That's the good thing. It just seems like, oh, it's just great food, and that's what it ends up being. It's great food. So I've taken all my experience, my career, and I'm able to put this into place to make some great plant-based menu items.
It's kind of like a beautiful full circle, right? You've impacted so many people, so many young culinarians that have come to school and then gone out into the industry. You're working very closely with one of our Escoffier graduates now at Hungry Planet, Shane.
He is. He's one of our culinary specialists, Shane Witters Hicks, a culinary specialist. Absolutely.
He's amazing, and we did some plant-based cooking here, so it was a perfect fit. Do you feel like you're still in this cycle of learning?
Always. You know, it's even the new trip to Dubai. It's like, well, you know, we've got these really great restaurants. I said, no fine dining. I do not want to see one fine dining restaurant. I always want to go to where locals are eating. So I had incredible hummus, muhammara, baba ganoush, mutabel. And these, every time you got breads from them, they were just baked, these little light, fluffy, pita-like pockets that were dropped on the table.
Just beautiful.
I'm telling you, absolutely fabulous thing. So yeah, always learning, you know. And this is one of the things that I think the you know, most chefs realize that, you know, as long as you do our craft, you can always get it better. You can always learn something else about it.
Sure,
you can always just find ways to say, you know, what if I do this now? Because I've been doing it so long, it works. So let me tweak it a little bit. So it's always learning, and it's learning about food itself. It's about applying heat. It's all about time and temperature, man. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
And also, and also about learning about new cultures. You know, that's why my wife and I travel a lot. And, you know, we just love experiencing cultures and people because it always brings us back to food. And that's one of the things.
You guys were here in Colorado not too long ago.
That's right.
Yeah, we were.
Well, let me tell you, we took an incredible hike. I think the peak ended up at 12,600 feet because I'm not the youngest guy in the room. So that was a good one for me. And on the way down at the little tiny village of Twin Lakes, there was this little food truck there. I can't remember what they're called, but you know when you take the potatoes and you spin them and they come out this big long thing?
Yeah, sure.
They were frying those babies and people were lined up. I don't know where they came from. And we're eating these potatoes with their dip and stuff. And this is good stuff. This is absolutely amazing experience out in the middle of the Rockies.
At 10,000 feet, right?
Because exactly.
When you're at, you know, Twin Lakes, what mountain did you climb there? Did you go up? Which one was 12.6? Was that Yale, ironically?
We were in between all of the collegiate peaks.
Okay.
We went up to Ptarmigan Lake.
Got it. Okay.
And Ptarmigan Lake sits up there. I'm pretty sure it's just around 12.6.
And
then we went to Cottonwood Pass and did another 700 feet to the top of that thing too.
It's a beautiful, and Cottonwood Pass is paved now. For so many years, it wasn't paved.
Oh, really?
Imagine.
I got lucky.
You did. Yeah. Imagine the dust storm up there at 12,000 feet.
You know, where I'm going with that is, you know, even, you know, you say even Colorado. And so here you go out there and you're in the middle, really out in kind of the wilderness. And there's people just loving what they're doing. They've got this little wagon. They're making really great little burgers, these fun potatoes. You're sitting outside. And
they're finding an audience that wants them. Yeah.
It's a great experience. This is what it is. It doesn't have to be a 3 Michelin star restaurant to have a fun experience. And that's the learning that you can always do when you're involved in food.
I love it. I love it. You mentioned your time in the military. Before we go away from that, I wanted to just ask, over the years that I've known you, the things that have really impressed me is your passion, your respect for the craft, good food, just like we've talked about today. Did serving in the military shape some of that sort of discipline, that approach to cooking in a very respectful way?
In many, many ways. The good ones were, you learn how important it is, because you basically, every day is a banquet. That's basically what it is. And it's a dynamic menu that, because it changes every single day, which in hindsight helped me for college and university dining, which changes every single day. Okay. And how you plan for that and execute, because when those Marines lined up, they have a finite period of time that they need to go through that chow line, eat, and get back to what they're doing. So the discipline of who does what, when is it done, how is it done? And here's the thing, you know, people always, you know, in the old days, used to make fun about military cooking, but progressive cooking was always part of the best dining halls. That was like, you had to progressively cook, you know, because you got to think about it. We had an opportunity to impact these Marines' lives just three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Do the best you can do. Do the best you can do. And so me, you know, know-it-all 18-year-old, I started to get a little belligerent to one of the Marines at the breakfast, you know, making
eggs. No, you? No.
Yeah. And so once I said, here, eggs, take them or leave them, he stepped aside. My company commander was standing just like this, right behind him. And when we were done, he's like, come over here. And he's like, basically, who do you think you are? You just ruined that guy's day. Think about it.
Yeah.
And you know what? That hit me like a ton of bricks. And I never forgot it. And I never, ever went down that road again. Because this guy simply came in and wanted some eggs. And I was being an idiot about the eggs. You know, like, so what? Scramble his eggs and hand him some eggs. They have a nice day. What's so hard about
that?
He was your customer.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, so I learned the discipline of doing things. And I also learned, very importantly, what it means to be a chef and serving your guests. And they may not always be right, but you want to make them feel like they're right.
They are your guest. Yeah. That's a good lesson. So, Chef, throughout your career, you've received many awards, including the ACF President's Medallion for all the contributions that you had to the MasterChef exam. What do these awards, you started to allude to this a little bit at the beginning, but I'm just curious, what do these awards mean to you later in your career? And did they motivate you then? And do they motivate you today? It's a great story, right?
So, Kirk, I never did anything with the intent that I might get an award. It was my desire to help the project, my desire to help the industry, my desire to participate and be a positive influence in making things better for the people coming after me. Yeah, giving back or paying forward, however described today. And it was never about getting an award. And, you know, getting an award, it's simply the fact that, you know what, somebody paid attention. And you know what? It feels very good. I'll be no mistake about it. If your efforts are recognized, you feel good about that. And what does that do? It interests you and it inspires me to do more. And so that's where that is right now. But it was never to get an award. The only thing that I did to get was the Certified Master Chef. I drove myself on that one. And on that, I wanted to prove to me that I could meet the standard, that I could meet this incredibly high standard. That's why I did that. And because I didn't get a promotion out of it, but I was in a great place. I was at the CIA. I was just doing incredible things. And it was just a great, great 25-year career there. But it was for me to prove to me that I could meet the standards of others that are master chefs.
Yeah, I love that. The story you hear, and I'm sure everyone has a different story. You know, we're talking about learning and education. You know, oftentimes when you go to an event, you know, it's about learning something. There's an agenda, and here are some of the learning outcomes that we're going to discuss. But I've been told by more than one master chef who's completed the exam that that exam is not something that you go to learn. You have to know your craft when you show up for those 8 days. If there's some learning that takes place, great, but you're not there to learn. You have to demonstrate what you know. Is that pretty accurate?
It's exactly that. The idea, the notion behind it, in my view of this, is go to demonstrate mastery of a craft. You don't go to check boxes. If you say, well, I studied that and I studied that and I studied that. You know what? I've seen too many people that really can check boxes, but you know, they haven't mastered the craft. It's hard to really define what does that mean. Okay, you got to really cook really well. I get that. Everybody goes like, at the same time, you need to know some background about the history of the dishes. You need to understand where things come from. You need to be able to talk to your potential peers about what you did, why you did it, how you did it, without being cocky.
Sure. And the cost control piece of it is important too, right?
All of that is. And how you interact with your apprentice is important.
Sure.
And knowing the nutritional profile of the foods are important. And if somebody gives you some frozen oxtails, what are you going to do and have it ready in about 3.5 to 4 hours? So, you know, those are some of the things that take place.
Mastering the craft. Yeah. So as an educator and someone who for many years has trained and elevated the skills of others, other chefs, other cooks, what are some, in your opinion, some of the most important concepts or characteristics that you try or at least hope to instill into, let's call it, students that you mentor currently and have mentored? What are the things, the takeaways that you're looking to provide?
So that's a very, very good question. You definitely want to provide and help them to understand the technical aspect of what we're doing.
Sure.
So they, you know, as much of the science that they can understand it and, you know, help them through applying all of those types of applying the technology around it. Then the other part is, what can I do to inspire them? Here's the thing. I'm not always convinced you can motivate people because in some ways, motivation is kind of like built in
from within.
But you can inspire them. You can get that spark to inspire them that gets that motivation fired up. So what do you do to inspire them? You know, what types of things? And, you know, it's going to be different for a lot of people. So you got to, you know, you got a class of 20 people. It's going to be hard to tailor to everyone. But you demonstrate your bearing, you demonstrate values, you demonstrate commitment to excellence. You demonstrate these things with the hope that that will inspire people to say, I get what this is about. And here's the thing, Chef, it doesn't have to be inspire somebody to be a 3 Michelin star chef.
Sure.
That's for some people. But it's not for everybody. I've done star restaurants and I enjoy the heck out of it. But you know what? I'm enjoying manufacturing food. I just recently went out and helped and worked on a food truck in a couple cities because we did some plant-based pizza toppings. I had a blast.
I bet.
On the food truck. I had a blast doing it. You know, when I work with my Navy friends in their dining halls, I enjoy the heck out of that, you know, because it's like, you guys are lazy, man. Some of them. You guys are lazy. It's like, we're going to cook progressively. Well, we could put it in the hot box. Well, we're not going to put it in a hot box because even if you put it in the hot box, you can't go home. So let's do it right. Let's cook progressively. And, you know, those are the kinds of things that I think are really valuable when you're working with people. And it doesn't have to be only new culinarians or fresh culinarians. Those types of things, apply them to everybody that you're around anytime, because, you know, you can get stale at some things and you just need one person to come in and, and fire you up and was like, ah, you know what? That's exactly right. That's where I'm going to be.
And sometimes it kicks you in the behind years later. You know what? Chef Ron DeSantis told me that 6 years ago. I should have paid attention, right? You know, let's talk a little bit passion, maybe get a little emotional. You know, finding one's passion. Our family, too, I would say, over the last 2 or 3 years has become, let's say, 80-20. As our good friend Chad Sarno always says, just eat more vegetables more often, right? So I'd say 80-20. And, you know, our family's drive and my children's drive and my own drive and yours as well is to, you know, just live a fulfilled life, right? Just do the best we can. And sometimes, you know, we need some help walking down that path, right? But then all of a sudden, we sort of know that we're in the right place. My second oldest daughter, Kirsten, is a physical therapist. And, you know, it's just so great to talk to her because she knows she's found her calling. Wasn't always easy. School was hard, but she's found her calling, even through the pandemic, taking care of people, helping them. That's mm-hmm. what she was meant to do, right? And I love this and pour the emotion into it. But how did you know that you had found your place? The military, CIA, great teaching for a quarter of a decade. Was there a specific time when you knew, and I'll share my story after you, but when did you know that you had found your place?
I'm a late bloomer on a lot of things.
That's okay. Better late than never.
And I was, working as a chef, and then I was at the CIA, and I wanted to be an administrator, and, you know, did that for a while. But I realized that there was a comfort and peace when you're actually just in there working with food and making things and getting people that say, hey, this was absolutely fantastic. So, you know, it was definitely like the late 90s when I finally settled in. And it's like, so what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I want to be a chef. Now, I had already been doing this for quite a number of years, but I finally realized, you know, I don't really need to wear a suit. I don't need to do these other things. I really, really want to be, I want to be known. People know me with a chef coat on.
Sure.
And sure. They know me about talking and being excited about food and making sometimes I get lucky and I get really good food that I put onto a plate. And they know me for that. And that's when I realized that's what it's about. That's exactly what it's about. And once that's in here, my what and my why, things start to really fall into place.
You know, it's probably one of the number one questions we get from students. You know, they'll raise their hand and they'll say, when will I be a chef? When will I be a chef? And I always take the easy way out. I always say, you know, it's not for us to say. Some of you may be being paid in the industry working as a chef, right? So when other people call you a chef, I guess then you're a chef, right? I remember, and I'll be really brief with this. I've told this story before, but my mom was ill and my dad had taken her to San Diego to be with my sister and go through some chemo and different things like that. So they leave me alone, right, with the restaurant and my dad's reputation for incredible pastries. We wrap up in a really busy Saturday night and I realize I've got to get the brunch ready. So I know that I'm going to pull an all-nighter. And the hardest part, what I left for last, you know, probably about 2 or 3 in the morning, I had to make the pot de choux and I had to make the cream puffs, right? In the oven they go. A few minutes later, they come out. And that was one of those moments, right? Like you talk about where I just kind of stopped and I was like, I'm here. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do, right? Serendipitous mm-hmm. in a crazy kind of way. You know, I've got to ask, and I apologize, you know, I could just talk for hours to you and I really enjoy it, but I really want to talk a minute about some of these prestigious organizations and institutions that you've worked with. You've mentioned a couple, Yale, Culinary Institute of America. You've worked, and I'm going to miss some, but you've worked with brands, big brands, Coca-Cola, Hormel, Duncan Hines, Hungry Planet. What's it like to wait? Is that an amazing amount of pressure? Those are big, big names. What's it like to work and consult and provide feedback that they have to put into action with big brands like that?
You know, Kurt, I never thought of it that way, but when you put it like that, it is.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing that I've always reminded companies. I've said this too many times. Don't forget you're a food company, because you know what? It's all about, so you've got to work, we got to do this, and we've got to have thought leadership, and we've got to have shareholders, and we got, and it's like, yeah, but you're making food. Don't forget. And
don't
for
forget
me,
that.
I try to keep it as, I always try to bake it back to something everybody can galvanize around. When I consult with companies, you know what? I figure you're really paying me to be straightforward with you. Otherwise, otherwise you're wasting your money and my reputation isn't worth anything. So I'm going to tell you the stuff that other people aren't going to tell you. And, you know, I'll be diplomatic about it. I'm not, you know, I'm not foolish about those things, but I'm going to be straightforward with CEOs and presidents and culinary teams. And when you get to that, you see this like, what do you mean? And then you say, well, here it is. And they're smart people. That's why they're running these things. They're like, all right. Okay. So what do we do? All right. So that's a bigger conversation. And it's not just me saying, this is what we do. We have to bring people into play. And, you know, I just love working on those types of things. I love being a part of helping solve these types of, they're not always problems, but, you know, some are, but how you solve things, you know, what is the solve? And what can we do? What do we need to do to get there? So that's my approach to that. I was called in to train the chefs at Camp David. And, you know, not just the president's chefs, but the ones that feed everybody else there. And for me, that was a pretty high task. But at the same time, it's about making food, right?
Yeah, don't leave us hanging on that. So you did some work at the White House, right? With the
right.
White House around yeah. menus for children. Am I right there?
That was the White House and the USDA, and that was Healthy Cuisine for Kids. It's still in existence. And right now, very close friend and colleague of mine that used to be at the CIA, Kathy Powers, she's a registered dietitian, and she is still working Healthy Cuisine for Kids. And here's the thing. What do we do in these meal situations that we can make these foods be interesting for kids? You know, so here's the thing. So what do? You give them a piece of hand fruit, apple, orange, things like that. You know what? Where's the hand fruit go?
It's not interesting to them. Yeah.
What is interesting? Cut the apple up. They'll eat the darn apple if it's cut
up.
Sure
they will. Sure they will.
So I'll tell you a quick story about that. There was one time I saw the most innovative thing out at the Los Angeles Unified School District. And I wish I could remember the man's name. He figured out, here's what we're going to do with this. On the way to the little trash can, there's a table. And he called it some interesting name. And what you would do, if you didn't eat anything like that on there, you put it on the table. And what happened? The kids that really needed that food at the end of the meal period, the table would be empty.
Really?
Because that food got eaten then. You know, because there are over 17,000 families living in garages and street and tents and cars in Los Angeles. And those kids are going to school. And those are the kids that are getting those extra, those types of things that weren't eaten by the other kids. It's sad, but you know, at least somebody found a solve for it. He found a solution to that. He found a solution. Instead of throwing that thing away, you can put that on a table and somebody that wants it is going to eat that, is going to take that and eat it. And I'll tell you what, I am in awe of what they do, as hard as they work at the LA Unified to do the right thing for these kids. Absolutely fantastic.
I love it. Chef Annie Cooper, who lives right down the road, would have loved that story. Hey, you know what? We've been chatting so much that we're coming to the end of our time. I can't even believe it. I'm going to have you come back because I want to do a whole session on food entrepreneurship. I think that can take us a whole nother hour. But before I let you go, Chef, the name of the podcast is The Ultimate Dish. So Chef, Master Chef Ron DeSantis, what is The Ultimate Dish?
Chef, you know, it's like it's like, which one of your kids do you like the best, right? So, all
just
right,
give me one of them. Give me one of them.
You want to know what's my go-to meal?
What's your
my go-to meal is incredibly, really quickly high temperature roasted cauliflower. Oh. Simply salt, some fresh thyme on it. If I'm lucky, a little bit of bacon finds its way in there. And I keep it as simple as that. I mean, that's about the most go-to ultimate dish that I really, really enjoy on an ongoing thing. I wish it was some crazy kind of thing, but it's not. You know, it's just really great vegetable, handled the right way, the right temperature applied to it, seasoned perfectly, cooked right to that moment. You have caramelization, you've got texture, you've got great flavor, you got everything you can imagine happens right then and there. And you go a little crazy. You can make a little tahini dressing and drizzle it over the top and toasted sesame seeds with that. Some fresh, bright sprigs of cilantro or fresh coriander, as it's called in the Middle East. And now you got something to talk about.
Isn't that amazing? From a master chef, something as simple but as beautiful as a high-seared cauliflower dish. I love it. Did some of that come from the time you spent in Europe? Because that was a three times a week meal in my German household. Sometimes an egg on top, sometimes not, right?
There you go. See yeah. that? That's right. That's right. And now we were pretty meat-centric while I was there. That was my transition when I was teaching healthy cuisine. It's like, all right, what can I do? And that was that transition, finding the right things to have in that sense.
Lots of rouladen and sauerbraten and Wiener Schnitzel
oh, yes.
for you over there.
Oh, yeah. Schweineschäufele. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Chef, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. It's good to see you. I hope that you have a beautiful holiday season, okay?
Thank you. I wish the same for you and your family. Truly appreciate the time to talk about food and life with you. Keep up the good work, man. I love watching your podcast.
Thanks so much, Chef. Appreciate it. And thank you for listening to the Ultimate Dish Podcast, brought to you by the Auguste Escoffier School of Culinary Arts. Visit escoffier.edu/podcast, where you'll find any materials mentioned during the podcast, including notes, links, and other resources. You can also browse other episodes and subscribe.